Resonance Rewind with Robin Pierce, Jessica Burtis, Jenny Bill, and every so often some delightful guests from the cosmos.
Be kind. Resonance Rewind.
Midnight when you leave the office, and then you're found in a car crash with Benny Jalore. Maybe you need to sell your soul for 90 seconds. It's another Resonance Rewind in Hawaii. Thing is, of course, the 90-second war part one. What will Kathy Manso make of what could be one of her early experiences of Steve McGarrett, played by Jack Lord, Dan Williams, played, of course, by James MacArthur, Cam Fong, of course, who plays Chin Ho Kelly, and Kono, of course, as Zulu. Sadly, all four of them are in Heaven 5-0 at present, but never mind. Kathy? Hawaii Five-O, the 90-second war, season four episode. What are your thoughts?
Okay. I literally went through a roller coaster. Maybe not literally, but it felt like a roller coaster. First, they start off with the car crash. It's flipped over. They got to bring the jaws of light. I am in. I was like, here we go. Then we transition. We start to learn things. Things are a little sketchy, but I'm losing interest because they're taking too long with the investigation. But then I'm brought back in. And just like that, there's interesting, there's a second face of the same man who's not related to him. He's just a surprise. The other person's not so surprised. And then, of course, a fatal wound, which brought me back in again. And the only female role, I mean, granted, we can talk about the first person in the first 5 minutes, but like, did they do any? No. We're going to talk about the female interest of fake McGarrett. He was in English.
Luther.
Yeah. So
even at the end, he lied. He never really loved me.
He lied. Exactly.
I love you, Claudine.
And like, is Claudine like, did she love him? She had to. She's kind of cruel at the end. Is she just French? I don't know. She only had 5 minutes. And I like that. I don't know how many people are going to agree with me on this, but I did like how it ended, because obviously there's going to be more since there's a second part, but there was a conclusion. So even if you didn't have time for the second part, you feel like, ah, okay, I understand this part. Like, I can be at peace with this and not be at the edge of my seat waiting for the next episode.
I've given this episode a lot of thought over the years, primarily because this was the episode where, as a young soul, I was probably hooked into Hawaii Five-O for the first time, and I kind of realized that actually this is a really good series. It was released about the same time as UFO, and I always felt UFO obviously was given short change. Hawaii Five-O continued. It was certainly not mandatory viewing, but it was generally viewed every Friday night. We get Hawaii Five-O episodes and so on, and I think it's actually been unfairly criticized, the entire series, for Jack Lord's approach, which many people describe as wooden. And I felt actually in this particular instance, he really does go through the emotions. And there are so many cases from where he thinks he's actually got an injury of the spinal cord and effectively may never walk again, right the way through to clearly his frame and the way in which he works through that. I wasn't aware at this stage that the Machiavellian character of Wo Fat was the equivalent of the recurring villain that effectively emerged, was in the very first episode of Y5O, had also been in several other episodes. And Kai Dai, I think, again, really manages to encapsulate the villainous Wo Fat to a T. We won't go any further because I don't want to give any spoilers for part two, but it's quite interesting in terms of how that develops. And also, I think, personally, I like the way, the understated way, which I don't think the new series has captured at all, really, the 10 seasons of Alex Kurtzman's Hawaii Five-O, of Dan Williams' clear affection for Steve McGarrett and concern. And I think James McArthur really nails that. I'm not sure whether in the new season or in the reimagined version, that is, they push more of a bromance there between McGarrett and Dano. And I feel that doesn't work. Plus, of course, got to say this, Kathy, how wonderful it is to have these Hawaii Five-O officers in the heat of Hawaii still wearing shirts and ties and full suits. I mean, that to me, that is Hawaii. I can't go to Hawaii without wearing a shirt and tie. You know, it would be just wrong. And not a Hawaiian shirt, you know, an official and authentic person, because that way they'll be obviously top secret all the way. I just think that works wonderfully well in terms of the sequence and so on. You mentioned, of course, the fake McGarrett aspects and the lines within that. And again, I thought an understated phrase, but when Jack Lord says, "Well, I'll be damned," you know, it's and almost a juxtaposition with he's already thanked God for the fact that he's actually can walk again early in the show. I just for all sorts of reasons, including the fact that what we're seeing is this Resonance Rewind, is that actually it is bordering on the science fictional, because clearly that level of plastic surgery would not be available. You'll see other elements that kind of come through in terms of the Cold War aspect. But I felt that all the sort of issues within that, including, and I'm obviously eulogizing here, the connection between McGarrett saying, "I know how this works. Before they can touch me, they've got to actually get a grand jury indictment," and the way in which effectively he goes along with the plot to actually work through that. I think those things for me, they were all, this is going for it. This is working well. I know it's also been pointed out that possibly medical science was not great, so that anybody who might have had a spinal injury would not have wanted to have had the tow truck literally put the car over in the way that it was. It's not a good look, and it's also a bit more traumatic for Steve to actually go through, which is not good, but there we are.
It's actually the last thing you'd want to do. I texted my brother because he's a firefighter and he does this all the time. And it's the last thing you'd want to do is move the car in any way, because you're going to endanger the person. You know, you're going to make the injury worse. You would literally have to cut out the car and pull the person out. Granted, they practice this, so they know not to cut where there would be like a wire or a gas leak or something like that. But it would be such an odd circumstance to have to flip the car with the person in it. Like, inexcusable, unless it's like on a cliff and it's about to fall.
However, let's go characters. Any particular favourites that stood out? Was it the governor? Of course, Richard Denning's character of the governor from that point of view. Was it General Smollett, the code breaker? Was it Che Fong, of course, played by Hero from indeed Heroes in the new incarnation series? Again, that's another line. I'm not against the 10 seasons of New Hawaii Five-O, and I like the fact that there are lots of similarities, and Kono is female in that. I think they've done various other things, but this for me will always have a key part of my cultural awareness affections, and I feel it's too easy to slam, and I'll be fascinated to see what the rest of the team make of it. But what about your favorite characters?
Okay, my favorite characters, it's hard because I was more engulfed with the story than I was focusing on characters' positions. I think I like the doctor a lot. Like, I know he has a short period of time, but he really sold his part well. I'm surprised that I liked Claudine so much. for having such a small role. But she wouldn't be my favorite. I just thought she was important enough, you know, and I liked what she added to the story, I guess.
Especially the line, "You're not Luther, you're McGarrett."
And then being asked by Luther, "Could you tell?" Yes. He doesn't really love me. This is what I mean. This is gold stuff. So yeah, I think this is the first time where I can't automatically say I have a favorite character. I think I was just really impressed with how, like, I feel like every person involved delivered such quality lines, you know, like just seeing the moment where McGarrett thought he couldn't walk to realizing that he could was powerful. Like, I really thought that guy was ruined. I really thought from the beginning of the episode, oh my God, this doesn't look good. Like,
there was a season one episode entitled Blind Tiger, where actually McGarrett loses his sight, which also showed the vulnerability of the character. But for me, again, something I'll be saying later on in today's Resonance Rewind, I feel that if this were to be translated to a contemporary series, it would basically run over a 10-episode story arc. And I think it would actually open up a whole range of things. And that even is even more applicable when you get around to actually looking at part two, the 92nd War part two. But that's, again, for another time.
Oh, I can imagine a miniseries to be so much darker. Like, I can really see it to be very dark very quickly. but I wanted to comment earlier, because I've seen a lot of the episodes of the new 5-0. Or the more recent 5-0. And I think comparatively between the old one and the new one, I think all they were trying to do, or at least my perspective of it, is they were kind of modernizing it. Like, I agree with you. There's definitely more of a bromance, but it's because of that modern, you know, the culture and society we live in now, especially bros from Hawaii, you know. and whereas this, it's like, I can see... It's a better relationship. It's stronger. It seems like they're family almost. That's how close they are, which I appreciate, because it seems very real at the time, because they probably spent most of their time together anyway.
I mean, again, a very understated line delivered by Cam Fong as Chin Ho Kelly, where he actually says, "How is he?" And the way he actually just says, "How is he?" I think it just worked, again, in a lot of ways. So again, we may not have had gender equality, but I think in terms of a multiracial cast, effective.
No, absolutely. I mean, that's exactly what I mean by, I don't think I have a favorite character, because everyone just did their job so well. Like, there was always a line from someone that they delivered, and it hit the mark exactly how it was supposed to. That's really what brought me into it. Because even when they were going a little bit more investigative and I thought I was losing interest, they were still providing, you know, just the right kind of acting, I guess, for me, at least.
I've got to go for Jack Lord as Steve McGarrett as my personal favorite, because we're fellow Capricorn goats. So I'm just saying, he has more and better hair than I have ever had. But that's by the by. You know, I mean, the Jack Lord hairstyle, again, was something which highly impressive in terms of the way forward. And certainly I feel Jack Lord has always beaten Alex Lachlan in terms of McGarrett hairstyles. I'm just saying.
But I got to say... McGarrett had great hair, but like, what was going on with the makeup? Well, like, am I alone on this? I was like, his face isn't, this is makeup, but why would they do this to him? Why does he look like about to go to his wake?
The vulnerabilities coming across that. Okay, we're going to have a bit more music in a few seconds. We'll get the rest of the team in for their views, but we need to ask you, Kathy, what is your score for part one? This two-parter, The 92nd War.
Okay. The twists make it way high. Like, it's definitely worth it. I was engaged. And even though there was maybe a short period of time I wasn't, I'm going to give it an 8.5.
Well, we've heard what Kathy Manso makes of the 92nd War. Question is, let's find out more about Leonard Freeman's original story and in teleplay by John and D.F. Black, directed by Bob Sweeney, but of course summarized in Resonance Rewind by the man who's always got his finger on the pulse of BAFTA Award winners 2022, Robin Pierce.
You mean the guy who didn't see any of them, don't you? Yeah. Well, you know, people ask me why I prefer old TV series and films. And there's, you know, over a century of old films, there's only about, well, 2 or 3 years of good new TV. So it's a matter of choice. This week, we're looking at a gem of certainly my childhood. And I believe you've mentioned to me in a conversation before, Alex, that this is your favourite TV series. Did you know?
It's well up there. And this particular episode is, or two-parter actually, is something that really switched me from being a casual viewer into quite an avid aficionado of the Jack Lord Hawaii Five-O experience.
Strong words indeed. Strong words indeed. Hawaii Five-O is, of course, the long-running TV series, which ran from 1968 to 1980. It amassed a total of 281 episodes during its lengthy run. This is a two-parter called The 92nd War, or if you're looking for it on Amazon, it's just known as The 90. Other streaming services are available, but I don't think they carry Hawaii Five-O, so why bother with them? In this episode, head of the elite crime-busting force working in Honolulu, Hawaii, Steve McGarrett, played stalwartly by Jack Lord, is working late. He clocks off at midnight, packs up his bags, goes off for the day, for the night, and next thing we know, he's found unconscious in an upside-down crashed car with a dead crime lord beside him, about 20 grand in money floating around. How did he get there? What was he doing? Nobody, not even McGarrett himself, knows. As the 5-0 team start to investigate, they find that McGarrett has deposited millions in a Swiss bank account, and he has no knowledge of this. There are even photographs of him depositing said sums. There's a code in a book that nobody knows how he got, because he can't remember writing it. It can only be the work of one man, the fiendish Wofat, who was the series' recurring villain and pretty much McGarrett's arch foe. He was, to put it succinctly, Moriarty to McGarrett's Holmes. And on this occasion, he is setting McGarrett up, obviously, but we don't exactly know why. But the setup has a double agent who's been surgically altered to look like McGarrett, who McGarrett actually meets up with in the Swiss bank when he's doing a counter setup to try and find out who's behind it and to bring the worms out of the earth, so to speak. Guy's caught and he's shot, potentially fatally, as he withdraws the money from the Swiss bank. But before he dies, the double says, "Wofat bought my soul for 90 seconds. Now, we know that Wofat needs 90 seconds. To do what? That is a mystery that I hope will be solved in part two. Because, you know, once again, Hawaii Five-O proves beyond a shadow of a doubt, there is always trouble in paradise."
And when we speak of trouble, clearly we might be referring to the whole range of views on Resonance Rewind. But let's go to Jessica Burtis and find out what, Jessica, was this the first time you've actually encountered the Jack Lord incarnation of McGarrett in Hawaii Five-O?
Yeah, so this is the first full episode of Hawaii 5-0 I've actually watched, and my parents have watched it. You know, their parents watched it, so they grew up with it. They were they watched it with me. They were excited to see all the characters, and I don't think they'd seen that episode. But I thought it was a fun. I thought it was a fun one, and I'm excited that we're watching part two so that I can finish it up. But I'm curious to see how this compares to the rest of the series, because this was very high stakes. You know, there was a lot happening internationally with this episode. And the villain was very, you know, dramatic and very the quintessential dastardly villain, you know. I loved the dramatic camera zooms in this episode and the eyebrow raises that were so devious. So it was very fun. It was a good introduction to, I think, this character, because he was the main one that we see from the Hawaii 5-0 crew. He was, you know, seemed to be a big focus in this episode. So it was interesting kind of getting to just see an episode that focused a lot on one of the characters. So I thought it was very fun. There was a lot of intrigue, and you know, the whole double, there was his duplicate running around was very sci-fi. So I thought it was actually very fun.
Jack Lord, of course, was apparently, according to William Shatner, offered the role of James T. Kirk after Jeffrey Hunter had effectively said no, he wasn't going to do it, or rather Jeffrey Hunter's wife had said no, Jeffrey isn't going to do it. But in terms of that, certainly he probably came to fame as the original Felix Leiter, and indeed after his role as Felix Leiter in the first James Bond movie, Dr. No, he was apparently due to return in the third Bond opening, Opus Goldfinger, but apparently his agent was asking too much, so they decided to actually go for what became a standard for much of the James Bond series, have a different actor play Felix Leiter each time. But clearly he struck gold with this. It did last for 12 seasons. Always felt very much for Jack Lord and his very sad ending, because he sadly passed away in 1997-98 of Alzheimer's, which I think was beginning to show in the latter part of the 12-year series. But I certainly felt his vulnerability. I mean, he was often criticised, I think, by a lot of critics. Certainly British critics were saying, he's so wooden, etc. I think we see a side to his vulnerability here which worked so well. And clearly his relief when he realised he wasn't paralysed and he could move his hands. Well, why can't I move my hands? I can move my hands. Thank God. And also, I thought the understated but nevertheless very tight relationship between Dan Williams, played by James MacArthur, and Chin-Ho Kelly, played by Cam Fong, really interconnected with them in a way which somehow the 10 seasons of the revamped Hawaii 5-0 never quite managed to achieve, I felt, in terms of the approach to that, with obviously a whole range of things going there. There were some good parts about it, but not necessarily on this level. Before we turn to Jenny, I will actually say, potent memory for me, there were two seasons, there were two brand new series that were pushed heavily on Chinese television in the period of 1969, summer 69, etc. And they were really tied in. And for a while, I kind of blurred the two together. Those series were Hawaii 5-0 and UFO. For some reason, I felt that there was a kind of the potential crossover was there. It never actually occurred, but it, you know, in one's mind, it could well have been taking place in a similar reality. Jenny, what about yourself and this season four episode, a very strong season four, of course, of Hawaii 5-0?
It's just so weird what you should have said there, Alex, about UFO and Hawaii 5-0, because I love both series. And I also, as a young girl, I really loved Jack Lord, and of course I loved, I've forgotten his name now.
Ed Bishop. Ed Bishop as Commander Straker.
They kind of play these very solitary, really quite lonely kind of characters, which obviously I wanted to be like that. And I love it. I think Jack Lord was perfect in this part. And I mean, he looks great, and he looks like he just walked out of a catalogue. And I love the way it's filmed, like Jessica was saying. I love the sort of the close-ups and the sort of shake when the cameras are sort of shaking to show certain things. I think the acting is very good, and I think the script is very good. And it is generally the whole series, as I remember it, is kind of almost the Jack Lord show because it's all about Steve McGarrett and everybody else is kind of, I think he must be in just about every single scene of every single episode. The only thing with this episode that I was a bit horrified is that there's this guy that's had an injury, which turns out to be a spinal injury, but they're going to flip the car and they're not even going, and then they don't even put a neck brace on him. And I was like, no, 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 that would never, ever happen in real life. And I didn't understand why they had to spend so much time on the business with the car. I thought that was all unnecessary. And it was all a little bit, I just thought it seemed a little silly, because you just wouldn't do that if someone was injured in that way. So I thought it was quite unnecessary. And then I thought it was so interesting that they spent so long on the spinal investigations as well, which I also thought was kind of like, yeah, it's really interesting. But, you know, when you've got an episode that's only 50 minutes long, there seemed to be a lot of things spent on stuff that was just like showing you things that you didn't necessarily have to see so much of. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I disagree to a certain extent, because one of the points that I felt, and by the way, actually, Kathy Manso fully endorses your view with respect to the flipping the car over was not necessarily the best way to actually treat somebody with a spinal injury or prospective spinal injury. But I felt that actually, if a modern day version of this was taking place, which obviously there was a modern day version, I have a feeling that the directors and the producers might have been tempted to stretch it out even further, possibly over a 5-part miniseries arc. But that's by the by. Let's go back to Robin, because this was obviously written, or the teleplay was written, by the same gentleman who did last week's Star Trek episode Naked Time, and certainly was connected with respect to it. Yep. So. Yes. Do you feel, and bear in mind that was one of the challenges actually on an event, Robin and myself were both at Sci-Fi Weekend a couple of years ago, when I said which writer actually penned both episodes of Hawaii Five-O and Star Trek, the original series. And of course, that was another interconnection with the whole process. What are your thoughts overall, Robin, in terms of this first part and the way the twist develops and how it expands? And of course, we see some really fascinating interplay, I think, between the 5-0 crew, who obviously in this case, one of their own has actually suffered.
Absolutely. Well, let's take the overall look on this. I haven't seen an episode of Hawaii Five-0 possibly since the 70s. And I remember I enjoyed it. It was on, sometimes we had it on a Tuesday evening, sometimes we had it on a Friday evening, but it was very much a part of my teenage years. And it surprised me how good it was and how well it held up. Because as I said about Shatner last week, I think Jack Lord was a far better actor than he was ever given credit for. He played it as Shatner did, very much stalwart, stoic, 60s leading man. And in this, as did Shatner last week, he showed a lot of vulnerability. Now, as with Jenny, I haven't heard what Kathy thought. Obviously, they had to get McGarrett out of the car. They thought at that point that he was paralyzed. It didn't make sense. Okay, if they had to flip the car over, I would have thought that they'd have only brought it up at an angle where they could possibly get him out, because just roughly flipping it over, so it was actually rocking on its suspension. As an ex-first aider, I was thinking, sweet Mother Mary, they've just killed him. But as for spending a lot of time on the car, I think that what this brings into focus is that rather than be a typical action adventure show of the time, this took a step in the other direction and was more of a police procedural, where you get to see the details of the of the ongoing investigation. And, you know, they had to give a convincing account as to how McGarrett was able to suddenly overcome his paralysis and that they were going to do everything possible to treat him. I thought this was an amazing episode. I mean, it really hooked me in from the very beginning. And I'm reluctant to give an overall mark or judgment on this, because so many times in two-parters, I've seen a brilliant setup in part one, only for it all to be, you know, given a throwaway ending in a second part. So I'm hoping that the second part, which I'm saving till next week, will be as good as this one. I thought the performances were really, really good. And I enjoy the and I never got this the first time, the interrelationship, if you like, of the Hawaii Five-O family, because you have got Steve McGarrett, Jack Lord, as the stalwart male lead. He's the action guy. Danny Williams, played by James MacArthur, is very much the sidekick. He is the Robin to McGarrett's Batman. Then on the other hand, you've got, now, was it a guy called Zulu as Kono? He's obviously the muscle. He only had one line in the whole episode. Then I think that the heart of the series is the actor Cam Fong as Chin-Ho Kelly. And he appears to be so fatherly. Even when they were examining the car, he was nodding sagely with a very worried expression, which never came off his face during the series, while holding a pipe thoughtfully in his mind, in his mouth. And he was always the one that McGarrett would turn to for advice, as I recall. But I never quite got the dynamic. But boy, did it come through on this episode today.
Clearly, Dana Winter, of course, the main female character that we see as Claudine. Dana Winter, of course, who was also, I think, in Invasion of the Body Snatchers and lots of series as well over the decades and so on. I mean, Jessica, we certainly see a multi-racial cast, which is, to its credit, I mean, again, it's mostly masculine, admittedly. But in terms of the sort of resonance that it connects, did you get a sense of the driving narrative? Is it something that you wanted to find out more about these characters? Did you feel as though actually they connected with you?
I think so. And I think that this episode, like especially for the German doctor, you know, he was in a really tough place. And I feel like there's a chance to kind of talk about what, you know, you think he should do, he should have done maybe, or what would be moral in this situation where somebody's kind of being blackmailed about somebody's survival.
The interesting thing there, Jessica, I think we're almost giving spoilers for Robin about the second part in terms of the German doctor. We don't want to talk about Donald Pleasance just yet, because otherwise it could open up a whole new range of things for that. Certainly there was Karl Albrecht, played by Wright Esser, who was the other sort of area in terms of the Interpol man, and that sense of internationalization that was there. And, you know, again, we see the sort of general sort of delivery and the pace of the story with, of course, music by Morton Stevens. We've heard that sort of regularly. So I won't go down the German doctor too much, because we'll certainly find out much more about the fascinating Hans Vogler in the fullness of time. You know, in terms of that, the original sort of question for this episode, did you warm to any of the characters?
I think, you know, I started off not being attached to any of them, honestly, because I'd just never seen a show before. So I feel like I actually got to know the main character a bit better. And I feel like because he is very serious, it can be like a bit tough to kind of, if you are just coming into the show, to kind of understand him. But I think you kind of see the tough situation that he's been put in. And I think that his character, even though he did seem like a little cold on the outside, I actually really started to care for him, and I wanted him to be okay. And I think that once you start to like empathize with the character and you start to be concerned with their fate in the episode, it kind of shows that you do connect with them. And I have nothing in common with this character. So it's kind of like, these are people who I don't live in Hawaii. I'm not in like law enforcement. You know, these are people that most of us don't share a lot of things in common with, but just their human emotions coming out eventually, I think that can provide like an entry point for some empathy and relating to them.
And of course, there's always the wonderful Che Fong, who is the forensic scientist who also tends to score all sorts of things, including identifying that the McGarrett's writing is obviously a perfect forgery, the perfect frame in every sense of the word. Let's turn to Jenny for favourite characters. Is it going to be McGarrett, or are you going to go for Dan Williams? Because, of course, the other thing that is particularly noted in this episode is the scene where Dan Williams actually looks into the car, into the smashed car windscreen, is something which is replicated in the opening credits for the remainder of James McArthur's time on the series, effectively, once we get into season five.
I think my favourite character is the theme music, which is just... there's nothing like it. It's one of the best theme and the opening, the whole thing. But actually, my favourite character obviously will be Steve McGarrett. And I think this is a particularly good episode, like we were talking about Kirk last week, where you do actually see him in a vulnerable situation and almost showing some emotion, which you don't see a lot of the time. But I do want to say that to me, the intro and the music and the actual intro and the way it's cut, I think was probably my very favourite ever TV intro, TV show intro. I love it. And then when I saw it today, I was like so super excited. I was like, oh, I'd forgotten how amazing this is. I don't know why I love it so much.
Interesting. Again, connected. And obviously not a fan of the 10 seasons that Alex Kurtzman remade in the 2000s or the last few years.
He won Hawaii Five-O and we watched it today. I don't know of any other impersonating series, but there is only one Hawaii Five-O. The other one, not Hawaii 50 anyway.
No, you'll find it is Hawaii Five-O, and indeed has got it. And certainly, I think there are positives about it. The one difference I would say is that the character who portrays McGarrett in the remake of Hawaii Five-O is too unbelievable in terms of his physicality as a Navy SEAL and so on. I think he's. I had a sense that actually, even though, as Robin said, this is the equivalent to Batman to McArthur's or James McArthur's Robin, that still there was something that we could aspire to actually be Steve McGarrett. Plus, I've said this with Kathy, I'll say it again, isn't it fantastic in the heat of Hawaii, in the tropical heat there, to still see most people wearing suits and ties if they're on the side of law and order? You know, surely. That needs to be brought back. I'm just saying. Robin, let's go to your characters. Where do you sit
dark
on the...
suits, even. Dark suits, buttoned up so you don't see the shoulder holster, and they drive around in black cars.
Yes.
Nothing conspicuous about that whatsoever. But oddly enough, as you said about James McArthur peering in through the broken glass of the side of the car, as soon as I saw that shot, I thought... that was in a title sequence later on. I'm sure of it, because you either had him running down a corridor or peering in through a window. Now, on to favourite characters. Oof. I think it's got to be McGarrett, even though I'd love it to be Chin Ho, because I just love that character. I even like the name Chin Ho Kelly. How Polynesian or Japanese and American can you get in the same name? It's amazing. Like Jenny, I have never ever seen a single frame of a single episode of the remake series. There is only one Hawaii Five-O. But before Alex cuts me off, I'm just going to say, we have taken a major step here with a TV detective series, ostensibly from the 70s. And now I'm still holding out a little glimmer of hope that we might be able to nudge Alex in the direction before this series comes to a close and sometime in 240, that we can go and visit my personal favourite, Banachek. Bring back Banachek.
It sounds like a plan, and I love it when a plan comes together, to actually cite a George Peppard moment from another series, which we might be looking at. It's the A-Team, Jessica, but that's another line. So, again... let's turn back to Jessica. What about your parents? Did they kind of warm to this? I mean, you mentioned, of course, your grandparents also watched this series. And certainly it was, I think, it became the longest running series after Gunsmoke, actually, because it did go on for 12 seasons, as we said, from 1968 throughout the 70s. Didn't actually wrap until 1980. There's always been, I think, with American television, this fascination with Hawaii. We had Hawaiian Eye before Hawaii Five-O. We had Hawaii Five-O itself. Very nicely put together, obviously, with Magnum P.I., with our very own Gene Bruce Scott, who, of course, starred in several episodes of Magnum P.I. with Tom Selleck. And, of course, they have also been revisited with respect to the revitalized versions of Hawaii Five-O and Magnum P.I. with Jay Hernandez in current times. And they have their fans and they have their positives as well from that point of view. Magnum P.I. into its, I think, fourth season now. And so it goes. Plus, of course, the series Lost was also filmed in Hawaii. So Hawaii and American culture, it's a state that has been flagged up. But let's go back to your thoughts and your parents' thoughts, your grandparents' thoughts on this original version of Hawaii Five-O.
Yeah, so my parents, I don't think they've ever watched the remakes, but they loved the intro. They got so excited to like watch it with the theme song and the intro. They're like, you have to watch this. It shows all the characters. This is essential. And they liked it. My mom said this episode is different than a lot of the other episodes that tend to focus on Hawaii locally. But my dad, he thinks that like military stuff is super interesting. So he was really fascinated by it. And my mom loves Dano. Like, yes. And yeah, my mom loves Dano and the Book of Dano, like somebody and our family would watch Hawaii Five-O apparently specifically just to hear that line, like just
which
to
of course
hear
he doesn't use in this episode.
No, I was waiting for it. I was like, I've heard of it, so.
So to push you, Jessica, who would you say is your favorite character?
I think for this one, I didn't like his character, but like the main villain, I think kind of cracked me up the most just because of like all those dramatic camera shots. Like he was really warming up to just being the evildoer of this episode. So I thought he was like the most fun character just because he was so devious. And I don't know, the devious characters are always kind of like, they sometimes in 70s and 60s shows, they always seem a little bit goofy. So I liked his character.
So Wofat, played by Kai Dai, of course, there. And once again, I have to say that Kai Dai's incarnation of Wofat far superior to the Wofat incarnation played in the remake version of Hawaii Five-O, even though Wofat emerges there. But there it goes. We will look at that at another time. Maybe we just need to allow time to pass and allow a certain amount of time to work on from there. I can reveal that Kathy Manso awarded this episode a stonking 8.5. She felt it sort of had its ups and downs, especially obviously the turnover of the car in the first place, but she was very hooked on that, so that's very positive. Our listener will have actually heard it from that point of view. Let's go around the team and look at the numbers. Jessica, what's your number for Hawaii Five-O, the 92nd War, part one?
I think just for the episode itself, I would probably give it an 8, just because I guess I was kind of like having to try and figure out what was going on some of the time. But I think the intro itself is a 10. Like the intro is a 10. It's perfect. So I think that averages out to a 9 for the episode.
As we said, Morton Stevens' music and the phenomenal pace, I think, of the cutting. We haven't talked about the whip pans, which, of course, we used extensively in The Man from U.N.C.L.E., but I felt that there was a certain pace and an energy to the titles that still connect. And to be fair, again, I think that was matched in certain ways with the remake. I keep referring to that because it'll come a time where we will review it, even though there was a gender swap and Kono became female in the remade version. It's all right. Well, he wasn't a transgendered individual. It's just he was portrayed by an actress, a bit like Starbuck went through the same kind of reswitch in Battlestar Galactica. So it wasn't a huge sort of incident from that point of view, and arguably was perfectly okay. So, Jenny, what's your score for this little number then? Part one, of course. Part two to come.
Well, obviously, I think it's a fabulous episode, but it's going to lose a point for the car flip, so I'm going to give it 9 out of 10.
They were just probably trying to ensure that they could get him out, and they'd already seen, you know, what was he doing in a car with Benny Jalore? And poor Benny Jalore, we don't know what actually happened to him. We haven't really spoken, of course, about Luther and the imposter Luther, who went through all of that plastic surgery simply to actually, you know, end up shot by not the Swiss police because they were well aware, but by a bank guard. Honestly, if ever there was a case of you shouldn't carry guns in Switzerland, that was a case in point. But as Richard Denning, as the governor, said when he allowed McGarrett to actually investigate it, clearly that voiceover by Paul Vries, Paul Vries, who was the McGarrett imposter as the voice of Luther, very much sort of opened up, as you said, Robin, "Will that bought my soul for 90 seconds, in a kind of Cockney accent, proving that he must have been English and a double agent, as we found out.
Well, these days, there would have been a few more words beginning with F there, because the Americans always portray us as a nation of people suffering from severe Tourette's, and I don't know why.
Out of interest, Robin, I think you should check out the Pentaveret, the latest episode, a series on Netflix with Mike Myers, which drops the F-bomb considerably, but in a way which, curiously, actually, I found quite amusing. But that's the Pentaveret. Okay.
Well, actually, I've learned a lot in this episode. I've learned that Jessica, Jenny, and I are pretty much on the same page. But the main thing I've learned that's actually upset me to the point of barely being coherent is that there is a remake of Magnum, which is in its fourth season. And I knew nothing about this.
And Higgins is female.
I have wasted 4 years where I've missed out complaining about this and boycotting it and letting everybody know that I'm boycotting it. I mean, but as for this episode, it's the car flip that did it. It's an 8. But I am intrigued to find out what's happening with the submarines, because they came, they went. Wow. Okay.
And indeed, what's not to love when you have WoFat patting you on the shoulder to say, well done. The plan appears to have actually worked. In part two of the 92nd War, we find out whether Diamond Head Crater is now sealed and what else is going to happen in terms of the variety of this aspect. And it's nice to see that Jessica's parents watch the new Magnum PI and probably thoroughly enjoy it, because even with a female Higgins, it's still got its wonderment. So great stuff there. I'll stand up for it. Don't worry, Jessica. Residence Rewind still connects across the ages. So good news for that. So I think it's fair to say we're pretty much in agreement. It's kind of the lowest score was probably a 9 for this. Or was it an 8? No, it was 8, Robin. So you were 8. Just about the conventionally 1. So there we are. But that's just for part 1.
Come on, 8 is decent. Anything above 5 is decent.
So it's all good news, in which case we'll simply say, to go into more Morton Stevens musical magic, from Robin Pierce, Jenny Bill, Jessica Burtis, and Cathy Manso, keep on resonating.
No. We need to say aloha.
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 Aloha.